Welcome to ABA on Tap, where our goal is to find the best recipe to brew the smoothest, coldest, and best tasting ABA around. I'm Dan Lowry with Mike Rubio, and join us on our journey as we look back into the ingredients to form the best concoction of ABA on tap. In this podcast, we will talk about the history of the ABA brew, how much to consume to achieve the optimum buzz while not getting too drunk, and the recommended pairings to bring to the table. So without further ado, sit back, relax, and always analyze responsibly.
And welcome to yet another installment of ABA on Tap. I am Mike Rubio here with my esteemed and still sheltered in place colleague and co-host, Daniel Lowry. Mr. Lowry, how you doing, sir?
What's going on, Mr. Mike?
You know, feeling good, feeling like my hands are clean and been wearing my mask, doing my part as far as I'm concerned. It's an exciting day for us today. It would have been a little more exciting, but we couldn't quite get the whole production together. We did get a very important part of it, and that is to be able to invite an esteemed colleague from a different part of our beautiful country. And it's my pleasure to introduce Miss Caitlin Katie Jones, although I should probably change that now. You can correct me as you reintroduce yourself. Katie, welcome to our show.
Hello. Thanks for having me. I'm very excited to join you guys and get to talk about ABA on tap. I think that's kind of how we all came together in our friendship towards ABA. So I'm glad to be here.
Cool.
And yes, I have not changed my last name, but it will be Truett soon.
Okay. Well, congratulations. I wanted to make sure I didn't get that incorrectly. So it's Mrs. Katie Jones currently. So
exactly.
I will correct myself on that. Excellent. We're really excited to have Katie, as any of you listeners out there know. We've been trying to examine ABA practice under quarantine or shelter in place, which for some practitioners, like Dan and myself, actually meant shifting to a whole new platform. In Katie's case, we've got a great example of somebody who had to adapt in-home practice to ensure that medical safety was optimized. So we are really, really excited to ask Katie some overarching general questions and let her fill in whatever details she can about all the things she's learned. And we're eternally grateful in advance, knowing that over this past week, Dan and I professionally had the chance to sort of reopen, if you will. I haven't personally been into any homes again. I've been still doing supervision remotely under the, somewhat wise excuse, if you will, that at least for some environments, some home environments, adding two people into the environment just doesn't seem like a reasonable thing to test out quite yet. But, I'm going to have to put myself to the test soon. So we're excited to ask Katie some questions here. That said, what, I guess just to start, what has been, what was the biggest obstacle that you faced? You know, how long did it take before your professional practice saw some implementation of new parameters and that you were actually able to execute those and then feel like, hey, this is cool, we can do this? And and maybe there's still areas where, like I know we're still adapting and learning, but tell us a little bit about the process in terms of time, in terms of actual practice, and what's changed.
Absolutely. So it's kind of been an ongoing process, So like you said, for you guys, you're still adapting. We've definitely still been adapting as well. So I kind of, as you mentioned earlier, have not stopped. Actually, recently there was a 2-week period where I stopped doing in-home, but pretty much since February, I have been in person doing supervision, doing parent trainings has been a little more telehealth. Some parents, so we've had a mixture of clients that were comfortable with people coming in, and then we had people who absolutely stopped all services, and we tried to continue with at least parent training during those times. So we didn't completely remove all support, especially being able to, help parents adjust to their new normal of being in home, having their kids full time, having the be the teacher, be the parent, be kind of all the roles in once. So we try to make sure that we were still available for the families who were open to telehealth for them. Again, we also did have some families who never stopped services at all. So I continued in-home support there. I would say, to kind of bring back to your question, what's the most challenging kind of obstacle that we've come? I think it's just a matter of trying to get comfortable with whatever our new normal was. You know, so we, in the beginning, it was recommended that we wear masks because we were kind of just working with the CDC to see exactly what we needed to do as essential personnel to make sure that we were also being safe, but also not exposing our clients to any more harm. So it was recommended at first, and then about 2 weeks after, it was kind of mandated that we had to wear masks. And that's kind of been the same ever since then. And that's something I've, you know, continued to practice even in my personal life, because, you know, it's not like if I don't wear it, then I get, you know, I contract COVID, then I can't go to work and I expose whoever else I am. So I am a firm mask believer. I think it's been an adjustment, but as long as you find one that's comfortable, then it doesn't really harm too much. It kind of has created some obstacles in terms of being able to hear the therapist. Like when you're doing a coex, it's a little harder when you're a little muffled with a mask in person. With kids who already have attending trouble, if they don't hear it the first or second time, it gets a little harder. So for that situation, what we've discovered is, you know, you're fixed 6 feet away, present your SD, put your mask back on, then get closer. So it's kind of some way that we've had to learn to adapt that way. I've been considering getting one of those masks that has a clear square in the middle so you can actually see your mouth. So at least they could see our mouth movements instead of us having to move further away.
I have 24 of those on order. We'll see when the order actually gets fulfilled. But anyway, continue.
Okay. I think it'll be a great addition because you can actually see your mouth movements, especially for those early learners.
Really quick interjection, and hold your thought because I know you've got more. So one of the questions that comes up, and maybe we can talk about this later, maybe we don't have enough answers, is for me, this idea of a clear mask suddenly presents a little bit more of a barrier than just the shield. But I don't know that without a certain level of filtration, it matters anyway. So maybe that's for a whole separate conversation. But I hear what you're saying. All something right. About a seal, just like I know that the mask is largely protecting my particles from coming out, not necessarily what's coming in, unless you've got a certain level of filtration. Again, this is to my understanding. But yeah, something about that clear mask that actually goes around your face as opposed to the openness of a shield. Now, with that in mind, are you guys differentiating between a shield that might have an open space below or a face covering that's more opaque or cloth covering?
Good question. We have kind of really just been sticking with what the CDC is recommending and kind of what we're comfortable with. So any kind of a face covering, be that any kind of clothing, a cotton, you know, if you do have a non-medical grade surgical mask, you could also wear those.
So a clear shield would work too then, a clear?
I think so. For okay. The CDC, I think that would work. Okay. I think, I don't know how well that would be effective because most of our clients are shorter than we are. So unless we are eye level, you know,
again,
that might not work as well. But I think that would fall under those guidelines, yes. That might be a further discussion on that might be for the next mask topic.
Again, yeah, just kind of asking questions in general. And I like your quick adaptation of kind of, you know, taking a step back for the SD and removing your mask a little bit. And in that sense, one of the inadvertent effects is that suddenly this idea of you gaining their attention is at a greater distance. So as practitioners, without even knowing, we're probably putting forth a greater effort to do that. And it might be a pretty quick and effective outcome, right? Where before we might have started from a systematic fashion right next to the child. If we're increasing distance, for example, all of a sudden you start with this 6 foot baseline and now you got to work from there. And that becomes socially relevant because where before we might have been trying to teach kids to keep a certain distance socially speaking, now that is a hard 6 foot distance for all of us. So again, something Absolutely. That maybe we haven't thought about, but is going to have an impact on what we're teaching.
Right.
So one of the biggest challenges then being sorting out the logistics, who wants what, who is able to feel comfortable with what level of safety. And then for you, what level of safety can I present coming in or present for myself? We've talked about the shield. What else are you guys adapting currently that has made you feel or you think has made clients feel, okay, this is safe?
Absolutely. We've definitely tried to reduce the number of people coming into their home. So where we might have scheduled, we kind of do follow like block scheduling. So if a client had a full day, they might have two or three therapists coming in their house every day. So we've tried to adjust scheduling wise to only have maybe one therapist the whole day, which, you know, then presents its own problems. If they get sick, their therapist out for a week. But so we've tried to reduce the amount of people coming into their home. We've also tried to reduce the amount of items that we're bringing in. So, you know, whether you might have a big backpack, now it's just your laptop and a cord and some other things you might need. We also do have a health screening that we kind of follow before we even step foot in the client's home, with a few questions kind of following the CDC guidelines. Does anybody have a fever? Any of the symptoms? Have traveled internationally? That we've even had to develop because some of our clients' parents are healthcare personnel. So, you know, one of the questions was, have you been around someone who might have had COVID? If you work in a hospital or if you're a doctor, that answer would always be yes. And if any of those answers are yes, we don't have session that day. So we've even had to adopt that as we ran into that, okay, did you have the proper PPE when you were exposed? So then you should be safe. And then we wash our hands first thing and wash our hands right before we leave. So if there is anything on us, we wash it before we even start session.
That's amazing. That's a really, really good adaptation.
What would you say, Katie, was the climate around kind of your integration or, I guess, reintegration, since you only took 2 weeks off back into the home? For us, I know switching to telemed was a little bit difficult. Both the whole transition to telemed and ABA, and also just the uncertainty with the economy and people not knowing what to do, you know, what their livelihood was going to look like. So that was difficult. And then going back into the home, which we've recently started to do, mm-hmm. Definitely has created some anxiety with some of our staff, especially as, unfortunately, we've gone back into home kind of as cases have risen as well. Can you talk a little bit about, like, your staff? Did they express a lot of anxiety or anything like that? Were they pretty on board? Can you talk about kind of just what that kind of looked like?
Absolutely. So I only saw the staff that I directly oversaw because we closed our clinic and we were only doing in-home services, which was another adaptation that we had to make because obviously you couldn't gather groups more than 10. So that kind of limited my direct communication with a lot of, say, my supervisees or other RBTs, but we do have chat. We use Google Chat. So that kept our communication lines open across the board. So we definitely did have some anxiety, some concerns, you know, but that's kind of why we went back to, we had our therapists also kind of do their own health screening before they even left their own home. And, okay. As a company, we kind of were like, hey, if you have an illness related to COVID, it's not going to count against you, you know, based on their attendance and certainty of their job. So a lot of restrictions for that kind of policy were lifted to ensure people were prioritizing safety and health, which I think helped reduce some of that because we did implement a process. You know, if you've been exposed, you have to follow the CDC guidelines, quarantine for 2 weeks. You have the ability to get tested or you can get 2 negative tests, then you can come back to work, proving that you're safe. But 2 negative tests is a hard thing to get when testing is limited. So kind of that 2-week timeline, I think, kind of did help at least give them we wore a mask, we had our health screening to keep them and the family safe. And then I think also seeing, you know, myself and, well, I think I was really the only one who never stopped going in home, kind of also seeing another familiar face coming into the same environment with you helped it feel a little more comfortable. Like, I'm not in this alone. We're both doing this together. That camaraderie, I think, also helped.
Right on.
Really quickly, just kind of anecdotally, worst case, best case scenario in terms of testing, if you had anybody that you knew that had to go through a bit of a self-quarantine because of exposure, professionally speaking, somebody that was, I got the first test and it was negative, and then a few days later the second test, or was it more like, no, I got the first test and it took this many days to get the result, and then it, that's what I've been hearing. So
That was actually, so the 2 weeks that I didn't work was because, actually it was only ended up being 1 week that I was potentially exposed to a positive case. So I quarantined, took 2 or 3 days just to even try to get a test, even stating that we were healthcare, you know, essential personnel, because myself and my husband had to get tested because he was exposed to me. So it can kind of have a big trickle down effect. Luckily mine came back negative, and then by the time the timeline worked out, that it was only a few more days and then I was eligible to go back. So I don't personally know anyone that has heard that actually got 2 tests, just because it's really hard, and I don't think insurance will actually pay for a second test, is what I was told for our medical where we got our testing.
Interesting little aside, just because I think it, you know, it is relevant, I guess, from a professional standpoint, figure out what these things look like. In a really general way, what's your biggest, most treasured lesson thus far? Did you have an aha moment? Like, I know we did with the telehealth part, where we were like, oh man, we should have been doing it this way. And not necessarily telehealth, but we should have been implementing certain things a long time ago. Have you had any aha moments during this change in practice?
Yeah, well, I think one actually came from me and you had a side discussion on how to shape behavior to get someone to attend to a video lesson. You know, I think what came from this is that is going to be such a huge part of everybody's lives, a child's lives moving forward, because if they have any schooling, if they have any other therapies, speech, OT, PT, those have all kind of been telehealth. That why are we not shaping their behavior? We're working on attending. We need to shape how we're attending to a screen. And I think, you know, you had given some, we had discussed some ways that you have changed that behavior, and that just made a whole lot of sense. That I think a lot of this just showed, like, that there's a lot more integrating into skills that we should be hitting. You know, I have a lot of parents who are like, oh, he just won't listen, but maybe I'll put him in a smaller room. Great idea. Change your environment, support him to be a little more successful there, or kind of things like that, that, you know, it's actually been, you know, a blessing in disguise that we've had parents at home for 100% of sessions now, because they can't go to work. Even if it's 10 minutes, they come in to get a drink while they're working, you know, tele-remotely. We've had a lot more parent participation, which I think is phenomenal for the field. They can't go anywhere, and they see that they're not listening, so some behaviors need to change. You know, they get the child to be the parent. So
they have a better respect for what we do now.
Go absolutely. You know, I think parent participation, be it, it may have taken a little while, has increased, and just a better understanding of why we're doing what we're doing for your child has been really cool to see, to have a positive out of, you know, this not so great situation.
You talk about attending. I think that's something that we learned. I think that we've talked about this a lot, so I won't harp too much on it, but how the direct transfer of technology has been so prevalent in what we do, and how teaching a kid the color red, you know, has become sit a kid down at the table and show them red 100 times, because that's how you teach a kid red. But hey, look, you could teach them red as they're playing with toys or things like that. So As we moved to the screens, it was like, hey, well, if we're doing it with screens, the kid has to sit down in front of a screen and learn. And it's like, well, the screen can also follow the kid. The kid doesn't have to follow the screen. Right. So that's something that I think we still kind of struggle with. You know, parents are like, okay, it's session time, sit down at the table. But a lot of the, especially for some of the more impacted mobile kids, following them around has definitely increased attending, rather than having them sit in a chair for an hour, hour and a half, whatever, staring at a screen, just wanting to exit out of the program.
That's not how they learn. So let's adapt what we do to how they learn and really give them what they need to get our best data.
For sure. I do have a question, though, going back to the masks. You've had masks pretty much the whole time. Have you ever worked on programs with the kids? What are your requirements for family or kids wearing masks as well?
Sure. So we don't require family to wear masks. Some will put them on, but it's more of, you know, we come in, as long as they pass the health screening, then we consider that environment safe. But again, that's very fluid. So if all of a sudden someone starts coughing, they have a fever, we're gone. And then at that point, kind of monitor our own symptoms, because if we develop, you know, a fever, then we have to quarantine. Mask-wise for our clients, we have added a putting on a mask and a desensitization to wearing masks program, which for the kind of the first couple months, no one was going anywhere, so it wasn't really a big concern to parents. But now that things are have slowly opened up, even if they've closed again, you know, everybody is getting anxious. They want to get out of their house. And if you're a mom at home with your kid, you're going to have to take your kid with you. So I actually have more, I'd say, in the last month started on more mass desensitization, because I think the realization of this isn't going away. You can't keep your kid at home forever. Or they may be going into schools, and who knows what that requirement is going to look like. So we have started working on. We did have issues in the beginning of kind of some of our early learners didn't. That was a change. You know, we come in as a care provider with a mask. I've definitely had kids who were reaching, trying to rip it off, were not comfortable with us wearing a mask while we were working with them. But they learned to tolerate that, and I haven't really seen it be too big of a problem. But it was in the beginning.
Well, you got to wear a camo mask so they can't see it.
Wah.
Where's the laugh track?
You anyway, got to go save ahead. The dad jokes for me, dude. I don't know that...
That has been kind of another thought, though. I was like, huh, you know, if I could get a couple of different masks, that might help them attend more to me if I have a character on my mask that they want to look at or
little
something, you know,
play,
I'm trying to kind
little
of explore that area.
Tiger's mouth, shark's mouth. Can we, and that might, you know, obviously age appropriateness is going to hit a certain limit there. Again, these are all things that I've been talking about out loud just for a week now. For some strange reason, I'm a little more concerned about my older kids than the younger ones. I think a lot of the younger ones are staying more at home. Mm-hmm. To some extent, maybe that was my unspoken logic. And, you know, for an older guy, it's plain desensitization, right? It's like, I'm going to ask you to start with 10 seconds, and then we're going to go from there. And there's going to be these random times during a session where whether we're there, and it's a hybrid for this kiddos thus far, it's one continued telehealth session, one in-home. It's just kind of plain desensitization with some unknown social objective. Kiddos who also aren't minding physical space. And now, again, really imperative that it's not just at some sort of arm's length. It's like this certain hard distance. So quick impacts in our practice. Yeah. Go ahead, Dan.
Oh, go ahead. You made me think about it. I didn't even think about the desensitization, but, like, obviously a lot of kids don't want to wear, like, you know, a gray mask or surgical mask. But if you're like, hey, let's be a tiger, or let's be, I don't know, a leopard or SpongeBob or something, whatever, like, that. Have you seen any impact with that, like making the desensitization, like, more of like a game, like costume play, as opposed to just, like, wear a mask for 10 seconds?
No, that's a great way to incorporate a little more. We thought about it with one of my kiddos that, you know, he loves specific characters, and so I know parents kind of search the internet to find a mask with that character. But yeah, I think, you know, superheroes in general often wear masks, that it's a great way that you could do that. But yeah, I know we kind of started the same way. Hey, let's start with 5 seconds. We have a timer. They watch it go down. You know, we're doing other preferred things, or allowing, you know, preferred edible after tolerance of the whole time. But yeah, no, I think integrating into play, if they have those play skills, is a great way to do it.
You can work on fine motor and decorate the mask, all sorts of stuff.
Conjuring up the
putting it on. We have a different goal.
Practicing the, or I'm conjuring up the old McDonald facial covering set. Right, every single face is a different animal, and you're changing them with every animal. I'm just throwing it out there for Katie Jones, in case. I miss
that
Katie Jones.
Everybody,
I used to be able to throw those ideas out, and she would just make them. And then, oh, look, there it is.
I was going to say, my head exactly went to circle time, but they could practice putting on their own mask.
No, for sure. Yeah, and that's the idea. Look at your mask, look at my mask kind of thing. And these, again, there's a certain level of age appropriateness, or I guess within that, with all due respect, a level of function that we want to regard to make sure that we're not, we're not doing twinkle, twinkle with a 14-year-old if we can avoid it. To say that very literally.
Absolutely.
So has anything changed for you thus far? Is anything that was restrictive at the beginning now you've been able to be more lax about because you've learned some lessons? Where are you at now?
I think it kind of depends on the family. So I've had some families that, you know, weren't comfortable with me in their house. So we had session outside and they set up a table for me and I stayed 6 to 10 feet away. And just kind of talked to the therapist from afar and gave my suggestions. But you know, given weather, that is only functional for so long. If it's raining or if it's too hot, that's not really something that you can do for every client. I think
cooking an egg on the concrete program, that doesn't work out. That would work out really nicely in Arizona, I think. Anyway,
sunscreen application.
Sunscreen application.
That's actually a program I did add.
Solar panel installation. You know, solar farm cultivation. Sure. Anyway, sorry, we digress.
Gotta be open. I think, you know, it took a while to be like, hey, no, where's your mask? You can't go to session without your mask. Or, hey, what do you do when your mask breaks in the middle of session? You know, our company did provide us with some, you know, but so we really encourage them, like, just keep an extra t-shirt in your car. If you have to do that, you just tie the arms back, you know? So really just, I think everybody's kind of in the group now, has figured out where to keep their mask. They don't forget it. You have an extra in your bag. And families, I think just now, as this is really the new normal, they've just gotten a little more comfortable. And I think, frankly, are thankful for the support that someone else coming in and helping them shape behaviors that maybe either were new because they've been home for 2 months on end, or, you know, trying to transition to telehealth in school and learning online, or just learning to keep yourself entertained longer because now you don't have that option of going out. So I think people are kind of getting into the groove. Besides, you know, making sure I always hand sanitize as soon as I get in my car, but that was something I did just personally before COVID anyway. But I, you know, have seen parents or maybe decorate their bathrooms a little more because we're in there, or they have hand sanitizer readily available. So those are some things that have changed and has been kind of nice. And I think it keeps their level of comfortability with us coming into their home.
Got to watch out for that, though, because the hand sanitizer is toxic. So if COVID doesn't kill us, the hand sanitizer is going to kill
us. A short list of 75 hand sanitizers were seen as toxic, Dan. Don't be dramatic about that.
Oh, that's true.
It's only 75.
For the CDC, you know, just scrubbing, making sure you actually wash your hands. There's always soap everywhere, even if it's antibacterial.
So it's not just the soap, but the actual
friction. Oh, antibacterial
to
kill the virus. Gotcha.
Oh, here we go.
No, just wash your hands and you'll be good to go.
In the next ABA on tap, antibacterial versus antiviral.
And a nice segue to from viral and bacterial antibacterial stuff. I review a lot of the reports for our company, and I don't know how often you write reports. We write reports every about 6 months, and the probably the most prevalent comment I've been seeing as progress has maybe not been ideal. You know, some behaviors for increase have been decreasing, or some behaviors for decrease have been increasing. The most common comment is due to COVID-19 and telehealth services, you know, behaviors haven't been progressing as they were before. Have you seen a lot of changes? Well, I guess first, how often do you write reports? In that, have you been writing reports that have had a lot of data from just the COVID time? And have you seen any difference in that data?
Absolutely. So ours is about the same every 6 months, which has been interesting, actually. Some insurance providers are now approving longer, I think because we're coming towards the end of the year. And they might not want a whole bunch coming in June 1st. So I've gotten approved for 7 or 8 months when it would have just been January. Yeah, so that's been interesting. But yeah, ours is usually every 6 months. And we've been seeing a lot of the same, you know, because either some kiddos have completely put services on hold during that time, so they were receiving no services, or just a lack of regression due to lack of services, even if it was just online parent training. So we've seen similar things. We also did a return to service report. So for clients who say were out for 2 months, where were they then? And kind of almost did a reassessment, and where are they now, to be able to assure that we are actually hitting where they're at now and not where they were 2 months ago. So we have definitely seen, not across the board, but I had some who did have a lot of regression, increase in behaviors, increase in new attention-seeking behaviors, because maybe they've been at home and other caregivers have come into the home that don't understand, you know, the functions of behavior. But I have some kids who have just kept chugging along. So it's been an interesting mix. I've had a little both.
Okay. You made me think about it when you were talking about the parent training. I think this leads to an interesting, almost quasi experiment that I don't know, Mike, if we want to maybe even look into, but if you look at the Lovas study, you know, 87 Lovas, when they did the, you know, why every kid needs 40 hours of ABA, a big portion of that 40 hours was parent training. So granted, kids might not be able to get the direct services they may choose, or by circumstance not be able to get the amount of direct services that they're getting, but Zoom parent training, theoretically, with parents being home all the time, they could get 40 hours a week of ABA. They could get 24 hours a day of ABA now, because parents are there 24 hours a day. And then with some parent training, they could implement whatever they want to implement. So.
Yep. And that's something that we've tried to capitalize on. Okay, well, if you don't want anybody in the house, are you still open to parent training? That way we can continue to work, you know, what's relevant to you right now? What are the barriers you're seeing to a functional day at home? And we've kind of tried to pursue that, even though it didn't maybe line up with our initial report plan goals. But I think it's important that we also have to be flexible and adapt to what's relevant to what kiddo needs, what family needs. And in order to keep that buy-in, you know, you have to make it relevant to where they're at, wherever they're at.
Yeah, that's very well said. Got to be flexible. So many times we want our kids to hit 80% of flexibility, and I see our therapist being like 25% flexible, and same with parents. They have to do the homework at the same place, in the same way, in the same order. And you got to write your name on first. You can't write your name on at the end, and you can't use a pen, and you can't spin the chair. But the kid has to be flexible with all the changes. So, yeah, totally hear you.
I had a quick aside that you guys made me think of. I had a discussion about this week where somebody conjured up this idea. This is for, you know, younger child, this idea of a waiting program. And I'll say that, and we can all, you know, nod our heads in agreement and be like, oh, I think I know what that looks like. But it made me think, for me, from now the technician's perspective, who has been on screen for a little while, now back in home, having to deal with what we easily coached the parent through just a week ago. Oh, don't worry, wait him out. And now that same perspective is going, well, that kid's got to learn to wait. And I'm going, what you mean is they have to learn to not cry or fuss while you're making them sit and wait for you to get your stuff together. And again, I'm not being critical of either side as much as this experience has really allowed me to reconceptualize or put a new empathy to the parents and be like, a lot of what we do is takes different perspectives, which is good. The child's might be the last one we consider. Like I like to say, hey, the kid has no issue with their tantrum. They're communicating exactly what they want to communicate to you. We don't like to hear the crying. And that's
right.
And I think that's the biggest lesson that I've taken away from this is, man, we have to be more empathetic, or better yet, without there's a little drama that word lends, or a connotation is a little dramatic. The idea is we have to take more points of perspective. The kid, or especially for a younger kid, for me, that's, you guys know, that's my I'm partial to that group. We have to take a cleaner perspective as to, wait, what are, again, not just function, what are you trying to get done? But why, in a sense, what is it developmentally or otherwise that might be leading that? And then how do we allow for it versus negate it? And what are all the differentials within that? And that's been probably the biggest lesson that I've been able to adapt personally in saying during this time. I'm really happy. I don't think any of my clients have seen, I can fortunately say this, have seen regression as much as some have seen more concentrated incidents of very undesired behavior. More aggressive stuff, for example. And that's hard, because you can have a kid be perfect on screen and they're doing everything you need them to do, and then you go on a few days later and the parent's like, yeah, they punched a hole in the wall. It's like, that negates everything. That doesn't matter how well they did, you know, on their reading that day, trying to build up to whatever amount of homework time, like a lot of kids and parents struggled with during this time, as schools certainly largely went telehealth remote access is better, distance learning, whatever version. But I think it's very exciting to see the aspects of parent training that are now, for me, that's one thing that I want to preserve. Going back in, as we reemerge, or as we now learn to kind of span both sides a little better, I want to make sure that every aspect of parent participation that I gained during this time, I can replicate now as we're back in home. So I don't know if either of you guys, I'll open it up to Katie first, if there's something that you want to make sure that once we go back to normal, then you have to take that mask off, and or you can take that mask off, and all those things are allowed now. Is there one thing you can think of that you're going to want to make sure you don't put away?
Absolutely, and I think it's the kind of blend of, you know, clinician and family. It's like, what is important and how for you right now that I can that I can focus on to make sure that we're keeping their participation? Because like I said, parent buy-in drove up so much during this time because, you know, they're in, and by no means on their fault, they're doing what they got to do. They go to work, you know, 8, 9, 10 hours a day, come home, got to get them fed, wash, go to bed. I don't care about their homework. I get it because that's not what the priority is. So somehow to try to be able to keep that understanding and importance of what we do being relevant to where they're at. I don't know how to make sure we do that, but that would be my goal is, again, kind of I think on the same point with you, that we don't lose that participation and that understanding of, wow, this really can help, you know, and just if we have your input and our input, we can the best of both worlds to make this work the best for each family.
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, I guess since you asked me too, I think the biggest thing is motivation versus prompting for me. That on this, if kids don't want to do it, they just turn around and walk away or something like that. And I think we've realized that so often, I know we talked about it last time, so I'm not going to harp too much, that we've gotten through activities just with prompting that we didn't even realize we were prompting. So I think it's been really evident now online when kids don't want to pay attention and they're not paying attention how much we were prompting when we were in person.
I think that's a great point that I really never experienced because I've stayed in person the whole time. But like, yeah, you have to change the whole way you present and follow through when they can just walk away and you can't make them come back.
I was going to bring that up earlier. And I'm glad you're circling back. It took the physical prompt away from us over telehealth. And that's something that Dan and I, you know, by and large with a lot of our staff, we've been exploring for a long time, this idea that, you know, how many times have we assigned something as escape? And yes, the child was leaving the area, but the idea that they were leaving for a lack of motivation or interest in what you're asking them to do, which is the usual subscription or prescription we give, versus, oh, I heard my mom back there. I just wanted to go say hi to her, and my verbal faculties aren't fast enough for me to say that, nor am I old enough to do that anyway, because most kids just get up and out of their seat and go. So for me, it's been great to see a lot of that now be forced into reframing and going like, yeah, you know, I know you've got all these plans for content and things that you want to do, but if that kid doesn't want to sit in front of that screen, good luck, buddy. So I had a lot of, you know, and it was great to see the evolution, but, I had, especially those first 2 weeks, a lot of technicians just this direct transfer of technology, which we love to talk about in this podcast. I don't blame anybody for it, but if you don't adapt from it, sometimes you're going to die a hard death. And, you know, this idea that we're going to, yeah, everything, we're going to captivate your attention and have instructional control over the screen. And like we talked about in earlier episodes, well, first of all, is that appropriate given the age of your kid? Is that possible given their level of function? And then what we've been talking about, okay, the parent training suddenly comes in, right? Now we really realize where the parent's not just on the screen, but they should have been a part of this in some way, shape, or form. So I think that we're having different experiences. We're all agreeing that these are things that we're going to have to preserve, this idea of parent participation toward. And something you said, Katie, was very interesting. It also made us prioritize some things. It left us with less time for a lot of the things that I've realized are goals that are divergent where they should be converging more, like between school and what we do at home. Not that we can teach the math, but the idea that now we have to teach or help with the self-management and monitoring toward the completion of math work, not just homework while we're there, but now attending on screen as well as the work that needs to be completed. That really, at least for us over telehealth, I think forced some really important and challenging lessons that I'd like to say we prevailed through and we're going to be brighter at the end. Now as we reemerge again, the question remains, are we going to revert back to our technologies and the application therein pre-COVID, or how do we ensure that we're going to preserve these lessons and move forward with them? So a lot of interesting viewpoints that you're able to land, and I appreciate that you're also saying, well, I never had to go just telehealth, so you guys probably learned some things too, and that was the whole point, I think, of this episode and wanting to have you on is you know things we don't know, especially in terms of safety and then how that translates into preserved and good practice, where the client doesn't suffer anything, but now having to adapt to a mask or a shield and, you know, some other odd things that you're doing 10 minutes before you actually get to engage with them. So we've covered a lot of ground here. We'd like to kind of take this time in the show to try to wrap up and gain some big lessons. Immediately, we talk about what are we going to preserve, and that's parent participation. What else would you guys say in summation we've put forth that is important to resonate here as we try to wrap up?
I can jump in. I think one thing that kind of helped too was like, where are we at? You know, kind of coming into some of these clients, they're where their whole life kind of changed, not going to school, they're not going to play dates, they're not even going to the park because the parks are closed, you know. Kind of, not that we didn't focus on what was prioritizing, but like you said, about kind of maybe some goal prioritization of where is that kiddo right now. And again, I think that also ties into their motivation, because once you have their attention and their buy-in, they're going to learn so much faster and so much more than if you have to struggle through and prompt every single response with an M&M. You know, you can get so many more trials where they're focused. And so really kind of almost maybe even taking a step back sometimes from some of the typical assessments that we use, and just, we're in the environment. What do we need to work on right now? What is your biggest pet peeve?
Right.
Oh, your kid doesn't have play skills, so he takes everything out of the toy bin and runs around all day. You know, okay, what's the priority? Which I think we do, but making sure that we don't lose that to keep that buy-in almost for parents.
Singular, discrete targets. Dan, go ahead.
You made me think of something in the beginning of what you said about, you know, the changes in, I think we like to talk about, you know, our change in routine and how we've gone to telehealth in our case, or your case, you had to wear a mask, and how staying 6 feet apart was difficult in the beginning. But I think we fail to realize often the other perspective of things and the kids' change in routine, and how a lot of these non-vocal, you know, potentially more impacted kids, they were going to school every day and they got to see their friends or something. They got to go play, and literally one day that just all stopped. And they probably have no idea why that just stopped. That just one day, literally life as they knew it is no longer life as they know it. And now people are coming into their home and they can't go outside and play. And that's got to be really confusing. What you said at the beginning of your response kind of made me think about that. But I think that's something that definitely, you know, evokes some consideration. And then I guess with the clients that you've worked with, since you've been there the whole time, have you, maybe some of the older or the more vocal clients, have they expressed any concern about COVID, or what's that kind of look like?
Yeah, and I know we're wrapping up, so I'll answer quickly. But yeah, you know, the understanding of the change in our world, like even with the ebbs and flows, depending on, you know, what number of cases are, just understanding, you know, germies, got to wash your hands to keep the germies off, or, you know, some older kids are a little more cognizant of it. And again, that does bring some anxiety, some fear, you know. So we've had a range to some of them. But, you know, just being kind of explaining why we're doing what we're doing, what are some of the precautions we can take and they can take, you know. One of my favorites is, you know, your cough pocket, your bat wing, your fairy wing, whatever you need to call it, to get them to use it. You know, give them some things to arm themselves and be a little more comfortable and be confident in the environment they're in. So again, taking that other perspective, what their perspective might be, and how can we teach them to be safe?
That makes sense. I think empowering is a big thing with that, showing that they have some control. Yeah, you can't 100% control if you get COVID, but the more that you can do to prevent it leads to a sense of empowerment. So yeah, I think that's interesting, because, you know, Mike, we talk a lot about a lot of stuff being out of our control, and we have some ability to rationalize that, but a lot of these kids have no idea what's going on in their life. So, anyway, I'll pass it back to you, Mike.
Information function. That's all I wanted to throw in there. That's what you make me think of, and something that I know I've always loved to talk about, and I'm glad has become a bigger part of at least our small circle discussion. But I don't know that in the past when we had a hand-washing program, it came logically to us in terms of having been in the bathroom, but the idea that we talked about germies, or however you want to pitch it, maybe that wasn't always such a present part of that training. And that's where I think whether we've become more developmentally sound, or COVID has kind of forced us or compelled us to go in that route, that is a positive thing, that we're able to lend more information, socially relevant, significant information in toward a function of why it is I'm imperatively asking you to do something. So where in the past I might have been, and for us, more of an imperative function, meaning I can't let this go. This hand-washing program has to be executed as written. And again, trying to be flexible within that, within reason, just making sure that the end product is your hands were washed, not that it had to follow some, you know, regimented task analysis, as long as at the end of the day, those hands are relatively clean. Now we've served a certain function, both from an informative perspective and a social perspective. So I think it's really neat that you bring that point up. I wouldn't have thought of it right off the bat, but it did probably give us an impetus for a whole new explanation of social relevance and an informative function that maybe in the past we haven't offered just naturally. So we've got some parent participation. We've got some prioritization of goals. Anything else we would say that is a good takeaway from our discussion today in terms of what COVID has lent to us? It's refined our goals a little bit, it sounds like. What else?
I think one thing that we haven't touched on, but I've had experience, is, you know, a loss of a family member. COVID does have some severe consequences. And unfortunately, I've had some experience with some of that. And I think, you know, how do you, again, you know, staying within our practice, because that kind of brings in a need for a psychologist and others, family support. So staying within our scope, you know, helping to understand that, you know, because that is a real factor that people are dealing with on a daily basis. And, you know, some of our kiddos aren't going to understand that. And, I'll, you know, if it happened to be, I don't know, maybe a family member, that's another environmental change that they're going to have to learn to understand that they might understand. So I think that's something where coordinating with other, you know, members in the community and in our field and outside of our field, but coordinating with other psychologists or caregivers is also really important and something no one really talks about, but it happens often.
Ignorance is bliss. That's what that makes me think of. Go ahead, Dan.
You know what, Katie? I think that just kind of goes with our kind of our overall premise of what we're trying to preach is making ABA more of a humane service and taking all of those things into consideration, taking the routine changes, taking the family member, rather than just, hey, this kid needs to learn to wait 5 minutes. So I'm just going to take the iPad away and make him sit there for 5 minutes or whatever, you know, work on turn taking or stuff like that. Like there's a life aspect because we're working with humans and there's things like loss of family members, loss of routine, uncertainty, stuff like that, that definitely can be dealt with and at least acknowledged in our field, I think is very important.
I think it really opens up our model, which has been a little bit linear and it forced us to consider other variables. So where the idea of uncertainty is hard for us to quantify as a field, the idea that parent availability, parent you know, accessibility for session, whatever it is, we now have to be less linear about the no, you have to participate because this is the way the goal is written. Okay, we're going to have to take a margin of error there, and then it's up to us to sustain that so that the A, the B, and the C end up in implementation in some reasonable level. We like to say 80%. Yeah, we're already accepting a margin for error. We're outside of the lab, as we like to say, so we're going to have to vouch for that lack of experimental control. And I like to just kind of, you know, give it our ABA spin or try to put our tech back in because it is hard for us to quantify a lot of these very important topics that I think you're right, Katie. I would not have even considered mortality at all, and I, you know, I feel dumb saying that, but I'm glad you bring that up. Anything else?
Go ahead. Because, you know, I mean, maybe not mortality, but if you go to the hospital and you're in COVID, you're there for at least a few weeks, and you're sick when you come home. You know, so
you're not back.
Not a lot of people can visit you.
Wow.
Can't visit you. Maybe they're isolated in one room.
Yikes!
And they don't understand why. I know mom's behind that door. We've all seen that as a problem, but now it's a safety issue. You can't open that door to go say hi to mom. Mom's sick.
Another
mom's in timeout
because
she cried too much for the iPad.
Conceptualizing that, right? Yeah, that's a really, really good point. And again, we can feel lucky that it's sort of a rare occurrence, but something that we definitely have to be prepared to adapt to continue to provide our, you know, more optimal foot as a resource here for families. So that's a really, really good point that, again, I certainly feel ignorant and blessed therein that I haven't had to deal with it, but you bring up some really, really good points about that. Anything else here, guys, as we get ready to wrap up?
You know, that particular situation brings up, you know, single. If it's a two-parent household, then one passes. Now you have a family member who has to work 100% of the time. How do we provide services? You know, my company itself has actually opened up the clinic, changed our clinic view to families who have to go back to work but couldn't otherwise receive services. The clients couldn't come in, but they stay in one room. We use our chat system, be like, hey, we're going to the bathroom. Is everybody inside? Okay, now we go. or hey, we're going to the play area in 5 minutes. If your kid's in there, we're going in five. We need you to move.
That's amazing.
Wow.
That's an amazing amount of adaptation you guys are doing, man. That's really cool.
That's awesome.
I think there's ways as a field, you know, we can definitely, we take the time to, if we know to think about it, take the time to adapt, we can really provide support to families and still be able to make progress towards our goals in this world.
And some people might see it as this additional, you know, hard to manage piece. And sure, it's more work or additional work. Maybe that's a better way to put it on us. But ultimately, we're just practicing more fluid and open communication. That's the one thing that I did think to say this week as we reopened and saying we have to be, if you think we have good rapport as a team, you know, parent included, we have to lean on that now. And we have to be ever so candid about anybody's comfort, discomfort, whatever. And we just have to talk about it and then find a solution. So I'm really grateful for a lot of the little insights you're giving. Not that I'll find myself in those particular circumstances, but the idea that if you just sit and talk about it, you can probably figure something out, knowing that we could always revert back to just telehealth only and everybody's good. Mr. Dan, you had something for us?
Oh, yeah. Just, what you said, Mike, with the variability made me think of what you always talk about, that Skinner didn't say ABA is the science of behavior. Do you remember what he said it was? I know it's a Mike quote.
Oh,
on the spot.
Yep, you did.
He said it's the philosophy of the science of behavior.
Thank you.
Just goes back to that that variability, right? That there's so much COVID and stuff like that. There's so many extracurricular, extraneous, I guess, variables in any individual's life that it's not just like gravity that works all the time. There's so many other things impacting any situation at any point in time.
Lab to the living room, margin for error, much less experimental control. And again, we have to remember that. And it does give us something to lean on. We know that positive reinforcement works because it was replicated ad nauseum in a lab with various mammals enough that we know that at a certain level of application with the human animal, we're going to arrive at a result that outweighs any other outcome or the likelihood outweighs any other outcome. So we can lean on that from the lab perspective. We still have to step into somebody's living room and realize that the experimental control is now by and large out the window, and we're preserving as much as we can when we can. So guys, it's been a fantastic conversation. We could probably go much longer. We didn't go way over time limit, which I am very grateful for. Katie, Dan, you guys continue being safe. Thank you for your insights and your time, Katie. We appreciate you being the first guest on ABA on Tap. Any closing remarks as we go here?
Well, I'm very excited to have been on it and been able to take my own sip of your ABA. You know, maybe a thought for future sips might be, you know, how we all in the field as practitioners and clinicians take care of our own mental health and our own health. You know,
wow.
We've talked about concerning the therapists and the families. How are we all take care of ourselves? And, you know, because we can't do what we normally do. So how have we adjusted to that?
Mental health, feelings, what is that, Katie?
We don't do
what
that.
What are those things you speak
I'm agreeing.
Of?
I don't know what that is.
I can't. Can you quantify that for me? Could
always
you,
agreed, Dan. Always agreed.
All right,
the best color. It's the most peaceful color in the spectrum. It's true.
All right, guys.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me on. And enjoying my future sips with you guys.
Yes.
Thanks, Katie.
Yes, thank you. Cheers, guys. You
Cheers.
Guys stay safe. Always analyze responsibly. Take care.
Cheers.